Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with the Season 45 Cast Prop Bet game today. And Alexa's not here. She has the night off, we'll call it. And I'm joined instead by Vaughn Stewart. For anybody who's been around for the longest time, Vaughn was one of our OGs. If you listen to us on iTunes or Spotify, he's the only reason you listen to us on Spotify and iTunes. Although I guess that's not fair. We did like raise enough money with the Kickstarter, but Vaughn was our huge chance that we took where we said, if you give us, I forget how much money it even was.
I think it was $100. I think it was $100. Let's not paint me out to be like richer than I am, but yeah.
Yeah, it was like if you give us $100, you get to come on the podcast and like do stuff. And we got lucky because have we had you on pretty much once a year, even if it hasn't been every season? We've had you on at least once a year since then. So here we are.
Yeah. Yeah, we've joked many times about how, you know, it could have been truly the most awkward, worst person ever. And instead, it was just someone very mid, as the kids are saying. So here we are. As the kids are saying.
Yeah. I love that. Spoken like a true politician there. Keep it in line with the kids, Vaughn. That's what
I'm very in line, very in tune with the kids. You need votes on every generation. That's our future, you know? The Zoomers are our future. And if I need to say mid a couple of times to get a few extra votes, you're damn sure I'll do it.
I love that. So, yes, mid is the word of the podcast. Don't forget it. We are still young. The gray in my beard is just there to make me look wizened. I'm actually very young. But all that being said, we're going to be doing the prop bet game tonight. So now for anybody who has not done this with us before, I'm going to tweet it out right now. So if I stumble over my words a bit here, my bad. But this is Vaughn's first time actually attempting this. Vaughn has been very good in past years of doing either bootless games or fantasy games or something with us. Lined up this year, we said, let's make them do the prop bet. And Vaughn, how are you feeling about your first prop bet experience?
You know, I feel terrible. Longtime viewers of the podcast will remember my exuberant cockiness about how good I am with both the bootless and the fantasy game. I come in, I have a lot of bravado. I mostly make good on that bravado. This time, I've got to be honest, Phil, I feel terrible about my bootless picks. I've done all my normal research, but this is just a totally different game. I'm normally, you know, thinking like, okay, who's got a chance to win? Who's going to be good? Who do I just like? And so I won on my team. And those two things kind of guide my picks on the bootless and the fantasy game. Man, but this prop thing, you've got to almost invent an entire alternate history, like an alternative reality in your head about how things are going to play out. And I have to say that I feel extremely unconfident in how I'm going to perform. But here we go.
Here we go. So I'm gonna go through the rules very quickly. So this is one of our games that you can play to win a buff. In the past, Thursday night with Peridium, Alexa and I podcasted. We did our bootless game. The link to that is also in here. The winner of that game gets a buff. Winner of the prop bet game gets a buff. I'm going to roll through what the rules are to kind of give everybody an idea. And we'll go from there. But so there's 18 categories, huge. You use each player one time. So Caleb, you're going to use once, you know, Hannah, you're going to use once. It just goes right down the line. 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. You're going to put either 1 point, 2 points, or 3 points for how confident you are that they are going to do what you think they're going to do. So like for Caleb, if you pick him to be the winner and you can put 1, 2, or 3 points on it, but your threes and ones have to equal out. So essentially, between these 18 props, the most you can score is 30, not 36. It is 36. 36 points is the most you can score. So I was lying to you, Vaughn, pre-show. It's not about half that gets you the win. You have to be about two-thirds to win. Last year's winner was 25 out of the 36 points. So your numbers have to add up to 36. We have a Google form in the description here. But I would recommend writing it on a piece of paper, typing it up, put it in an Excel sheet first so that you make sure your numbers line up so that at the end you're not confused or going, wait, how many? The easiest way to remember it, we had to tell Alexa this because she'd always add up wrong. You should have the same amount of ones and the same amount of threes. The twos don't matter as long as you have the same amount of ones and the same amount of threes. And your categories are the winner of the season, cries a physical tear, which is one Alexa and I should absolutely get rid of, but we don't because we scrutinize it nonstop throughout the season. Gets a hidden immunity idol anyway, doesn't matter how, any type of hidden immunity idol this season. Last season, we had separated the getting a hidden immunity idol and the Birdcage Idol. But that's going to be the third one. Fourth is gets 10 or more votes throughout the season. That includes votes negated by an idol. Number five is gets 5 or less votes in a season. Also includes votes negated by an idol. 6 wins an individual immunity. 7 wears a blindfold. Number 8 makes the jury. 9 hugs Jeff. 10, 3 times they sit out. So that means they have to sit out in 3 different challenges for any reason. Missy Payne tearing her Achilles counts, stopping to eat some cheeseburgers counts, or just being Sandra counts. So any reason you sit out. 10 or more confessionals in one episode. We probably should have upped this because it's the hour and a half. But you know what? If everybody gets it this season, everybody gets it. I'm curious, based on some information we've read from Jeff Probst, if what we're going to see for 90 minutes is actually going to be all that different. So 10 or more confessionals in an episode. We should see more people get that this year. Blurred mouth. We have to see the blurred mouth. So if they do drop an F-bomb or something, blur in their mouth. A confessional in every episode they're in. Again, hopefully one we see more of this year, being that they're 90-minute episodes. 40 or more confessionals in the season. Another one you would hope, but there could be more stuff given to different things. And we chose 40 because 40 is pretty much a final five number. Like, you have to be final five or you have to be Troy Zan in One World to get 40. And then 15 is an episode title. So they say a quote that is used as the episode title. Multiple people can say it. I think there was one where it's passengers or pilots or something, and like 3 people said it. Doesn't matter how many. Goes home with an unused advantage. So that means they go home with a idol or some sort of advantage in their pocket that they don't use. Shot in the dark does not count for that. Number 17 is uses their shot in the dark. They don't have to be successful. They just have to use it. And then number 18, because the auction is back, we decided if they get alcohol at the auction, you get points, because it was always fun to watch people get some margaritas, get some beer, something. They don't have to buy it themselves. If they can convince people to split it with them, good for them. Eric licking chocolate off of Cerise's fingers would count if that was alcoholic chocolate. So just got to somehow have alcohol. So those are the 18 categories. You're going to use each player's name once at 1, 2, or 3 points, depending on how confident you are. Vaughn, I know you were probably half listening to me and just filling out your thing. Any questions, comments, concerns?
I would say that's flatly wrong. I was only about 10% listening, not half listening. And I was definitely moving my numbers around as we're talking. I do not have any questions. I believe I understand the rules. You did have to remind me before the show what they are. So that's the extent we're talking about here in terms of my preparation for the show.
I love it. That sounds perfect to me. I am all in on whatever's about to happen here. So yeah, that's it. That's what I got. Let's get into it. And so I always feel like we do this order wrong, but we kind of start off with a bang and we just make you choose the winner right off the bat. So yeah, I know. So it's our top prop. This used to be doubled. We don't double the points anymore, but that's why it was always the top one, so that people understood. But Vaughn, who do you have as the winner of this season? Let's just like ruin any suspense for the remainder of the podcast.
I know. I kind of wish we did this last, but I will say that I basically did it last. So, you know, normally when I would create my boot list order or my fantasy game list, I really start out with my winner pick. Like, who's my top overall pick? Here, I really, because my strategy was different, because I'm only going to assign 1 point to this. It's really not a very high likelihood pick here that you're just going to scoop up the winner. So my strategy here is actually to fill in some of these other spots that I feel like are more likely to cash in. And then I was left with like 5 or 6 people who I couldn't slot in perfectly. And then I just picked the one who seemed most likely. So I can't say that I feel like super confident about this, but I have picked Kelly as the winner of Survivor 45. Now, I will say, Phil, this is the kind of archetype that I'm a sucker for, that I've picked incorrectly many times. Like someone in kind of a, you know, a younger woman who is like in a touchy-feely profession. I oftentimes fall for the therapist for this reason. Nervous is a little bit different. But I do really like Kelly. I think it would be nice to see a winner who was on the front lines of the pandemic still only a couple years afterward. I think narrative-wise, the show would be able, CBS would be able to squeeze a lot out of that. I like the fact that she said that, you know, she realizes that nurses are the most trusted profession and that she hopefully can exploit that. She also, I think, you know, mentioned that she can be a chameleon in terms of hanging out with different personalities, because as a nurse, you kind of have to be a shoulder to cry on for lots of different types of people. And I also just feel like she's on the dominant tribe. So, you know, of the folks on the blue tribe, I liked her the best. And I think the blue tribe is going to go really far. So I think she'll at least be around a while. She seems like she could probably put together a pretty good jury speech. So let's see if she can pull it off. But I'm assigning a one to this because I don't feel that confident. I do like Kelly. I hope I'm right. But this seems like a pretty much a stab in the dark.
So now let me ask you this, though. So you're saying that's who you kind of landed on. Is that actually who you're saying is your winner pick? Like, you're sitting there with your wife and you're saying preseason, this is who I'm like, if you guys made like a little bet over somebody's buying dinner, who are you actually picking? Is it Kelly still or no?
No. So, you know, my actual winner pick for the show is different because I'm trying to be strategic about my point selection here. Mm-hmm. So I'm picking people not necessarily, you know, in the route that I normally would, because I'm trying to maximize my overall points. So my overall winner pick for this season is actually Emily. Which is, really? I know. They're not exactly the direction that you guys on the bootless game went, but maybe just I'm biased because she's a Marylander. She lives like 30 minutes away from me. Also, Peridium, who I've always loved, by the way, is also a Marylander. Mm-hmm. He actually lives where I tend to work, Annapolis. I really appreciate him kind of warming up the crowd for me, considering he is, you know, much more internet famous than me. But yes, anyway. Emily is a Marylander. You know, I just think that I just love her brutal honesty. You know, I feel like I always pick people because they're so good at telling us why we should pick them. And then sometimes I get suckered in by their own lies. You know, they'll be like, oh, I'm great with people and I can totally charm the socks off of anyone I meet. And then they get out there and they're like, this person has like the charisma of a sock. And I always just believe people at face value. So I think what attracts me to Emily is she just like, you know what? This is a new era and I'm out of shape. Literally, I think this is a quote. I'm out of shape. I don't like the outdoors and people find me off-putting. So let's roll. I kind of feel like, you know, in this new era where like everyone's trying to vote out threats as quickly as possible, someone like that who just seems like they're totally not the typical person who wins the show, I kind of feel like the person who could win in Survivor 45. So I put my money with my wife when we had our sort of semi-annual conversation about who would win. I have put my chips in on Emily, but I had a different category that I thought Emily fit better in. So I'm going with Kelly as my kind of backup winner pick.
Okay. So I do feel like this fits your type though. And this is a full-blown compliment. So hopefully like nobody takes this the wrong way, but you're very into the strong opinioned female players totally. Who are in what used to be generally male jobs or like could still be seen as like male jobs. Like you're huge on Chrissy. You were huge on, I think you were big on Cass too, right? I think you were a Cass fan and now you're big on Emily. So like, this is not surprising to me in any way, shape or form.
No, it's not tipping too much. Yeah, that's right.
It's the same thing as me picking any male over the age of 40 and, or some, like 20 something girl from New Jersey. Those are my two things that I'm going to pick every time. So,
And I always either fall for like the nerdy super fan guy, you know, or like maybe the guy who looks a little bit bro-y, but he's really a super fan that I always get suckered into that archetype, like Owen, you know, I was suckered into Owen. This is my other downfall here. You're totally right. I love the idea of some of these like really brash women winning. And it oftentimes doesn't happen, but I like rooting for them for the sometimes brief time they're on the show.
Yes. So I've been talking heavily about Austin and Dee and Caleb, and like those have kind of been my people.
Yep.
But I haven't given enough love to a big Survivor Specialist fan who I got to meet, and that was wonderful. And I've talked openly about that on the podcast. But I'm going with my winner pick. I'm going to say the man goes from smacking his head into a piece of wood on day one to winning the game. And I'm going to put Bruce as the winner. Now, this kind of goes along the same lines as you. One, I just like Bruce is an easy rooting interest, right? Like I always think about back when season 25 aired and we didn't know about all of the craziness around Scoopin's life, to put it mildly. I remember like when that was announced, he was a very easy person to be like, of course you're going to root for him to win because he fell in the fire. That was an iconic moment. Like he's finally getting another chance. That's what happened. And I'm not comparing Bruce to Scoopin for obvious reasons, but I do think that it's an like, how are you not going to root for Bruce when he gets out there? Like, unless he comes out and he is like the meanest person to ever play Survivor, which would shock me. Because the man was walking around the season 44 finale like the president of the United States. I really think that you're just going to want him to do well. So why not just like, this is like one every year, I'll bet like $10 on the Detroit Lions to win the Super Bowl to give me like that one feeling of if they did it this year, at least it would be like I get money too. Like that's nice. That's a nice feeling that like I didn't miss the opportunity. So I'm putting Bruce as my winner. Also, the thing with Bruce is I think Bruce should go deep in this game. And if I wasn't going to put him here, I was going to put him as my makes the jury. But the thing is, like, Bruce also could go out early. I have a lot of high hopes for Blue. You have high hopes for Blue. Alexa has high hopes for Blue. But if Blue loses, and even if they keep him around for the first vote, all of a sudden they say this guy played. Maybe, like, we don't really know the story. I guess, I mean, they all watched him hit his head, so they all know what happened. But maybe they just get a little wary of him. I don't know. Maybe there's a reason he goes out early. Who knows? It's the new era. It can happen for any number of reasons. But I'm going to pick him to win, also only putting 1 point on it. Honestly, if you're filling out a prop bet for the first time, this should be a one-point bet because only one person is going to do this. Everybody else or everything else, multiple people have the opportunity to do. So that's why my recommendation, this should be 1 point. But if you want to get crazy with it, if you're really confident, go for it. So there you go, Bruce and Kelly.
So I like just briefly on Bruce. I like this pick. So first of all, I think I actually disagree in the sense that I think there's no way he goes out early. Like I think his range of outcomes has to be like 10th place to first place. There's just no way that anyone who likes Survivor enough to apply to be on the show is going to be like, oh yeah, here's the guy that was concussed 12 minutes into the episode. Let's just vote him out first. Wouldn't that be hilarious? Like that would be a hilarious kind of villainy move. Mm-hmm. We can talk later. I have this whole rant I'm going to unleash about the lack of villains, which I know a lot of people have mentioned. But, you know, I think, we're seeing a very likable cast. But nobody, not even a big villain, is going to, like, throw out Bruce's name in the early pre-merge. Maybe if there was a swap or something like that, you know. But there's no way he's going out. So I like this. I also think Bruce is a really interesting test case for those of us who have long argued that returnees have an advantage, and a huge advantage in Survivor. Now, obviously, we used to have a lot more mixed returnee newbie seasons. That's not something the show has attempted very much lately. But I think this is an interesting test case of that theory, because Bruce is about as the least returnee you could ever have. Mm-hmm. He basically didn't experience things at all. But I think that the little taste you get just going through that entire, like, you know, before the show thing, doing all the cast interviews, hitting the beach, seeing Jeff Probst. I think even the little bit of taste that he got, it gives you, I think, a little bit of a sense of confidence that I think will help him in the early game. I think people will be almost looking to him for experience, even though they'll all know he was literally out there for 12 minutes. And so it'll be interesting. I mean, I could be totally wrong. And he could just blend in with the cast and he's not treated any differently and he has no advantage and he plays terribly. But I kind of think that the returnee thing, like just doing this a second time, even when this means so little, I think actually confers a huge advantage. And so for that reason, really for that reason alone, you know, Bruce being a really cool guy notwithstanding, I think he's going to do really well.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but when I started explaining why he was going to go out early, I really failed debate club. There was no reasoning. The only thing I could see is if he comes out and he is super likable right off the bat to the point of like, wow, this guy's likable. Now he's got likable built in with we feel bad for him. That's a dangerous combination. And that might be something where people say, you know what, let's get rid of him before the merge because he might win some immunities or he gets in with other people. He has a built-in story. It's funny what you say. He played Survivor for about 6 hours, but he has such a built-in story in those 6 hours that Chelsea didn't have. And she finished sixth place or seventh place, whatever it was, on Ghost Island. So like it's going to be interesting to watch. And it gives me hope for like people like Pat Cusack, and Courtney Moon, these two people who we'll never see play again, maybe Pat, but we won't see Courtney Moon play again. But these people who do get injured really early on, and there's such question marks, this could become a staple for Survivor. If somebody goes home before a tribal council even happens, I don't mind getting to watch them play again. I mean, we all sat through Caleb playing a second time. Like, so like, let's do it. Like, let's have it happen. I think it's worth it. And how often does somebody come back and play Survivor, no matter what season they're on, no matter if they're on an half newbie, half returning, or an all returning, or whatever it is, how often does somebody come back and they just are such a dud after being like mediocre the first time? It doesn't happen very often. I mean, Francesca, they took a huge chance on. She goes home first again anyway, but Francesca's great TV. And honestly, that's a pretty amazing story. Like, that almost couldn't have worked out better for the producers. So I do see what you're saying. I do think people 100% undervalue everything that goes on before the game. And I think Bruce, another thing that's going to be working for him, he knows how to do the social thing without being able to talk to people pregame. A lot of people don't understand how big of a deal that is, because you can't talk to each other before the game starts for those 2 or 3 days. But he's going to kind of have already done the thing of like looking at this person, sizing up this person. There's experience to be gained from that. So I'm excited about it. I'll put him as my winner. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm going to love watching it, right? Like, it's picking your favorite team to win the championship of whatever they're in. So let's move on to some that require a little bit less conversation, but cries a physical tear. So this is one where Alexa and I and Will used to drive, or we still drive ourselves crazy, because like we need to see the tear on their face, the wetness on their face. They can't just be getting choked up and like being like, oh, this is a sad day. Like, they need to cry. Sometimes it's really hard to tell when it's nighttime and stuff, but they need to cry. So who do you have as the Adam Klein of this season?
I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Even though I've listened to all these interviews, I think I'm going to butcher it. It's Sabaya. Sorry.
You know, I feel like with Sabaya and Katura, I feel like I have said their names wrong pretty much the whole
time. Yeah. So I think it might be Sabaya, but anyway, I'm going to go with her. And this is going to speak to kind of my strategy throughout some of these picks, is that I really want to find some opportunities to zig where I think other people are going to zag here, or zag where other people are going to zig. Because in a big field like this, right, where you have all these people submitting prop bets, and you said yourself, you've got to get more than half right, or more than half of the points, you kind of have to pick a little bit of out of step with how you think a lot of people are going to pick here. You have to be, as like mathematicians would say, like, you have to be like variable. You got, otherwise, if you just kind of pick what everyone else is going to pick for like the obvious gimmies, you're kind of making it harder yourself, because then you kind of have to run the table for like these other ones that are maybe less obvious. So here I kind of feel like Sabaya is not someone that very many people are going to pick for crying physical tear, because she's like this veteran and this truck driver and seems very tough and self-assured. Now, I'm obviously assigning 1 point to this because this is just such a difficult category to predict, but I'm going to go with Sabaya mostly just because I think she could cry. It's not impossible. Mm-hmm. I also think that I also kind of like her chances of being on the show for a little while. Like, I think I don't have super high hopes for the Yellow Tribe, but I don't think necessarily that she's going to be one of the people who is an early boot. So that just gives her more opportunities to cry. I think that, you know, if there is some sort of loved ones aspect to this season, people always cry about that. And I kind of feel like she could make it that far. I also think that if like the auction has some sort of part where there are like notes from home or whatever, I kind of feel like she could make that far. So anyway, I kind of slot Sabaya in there because, number one, I don't think people are going to spot her as an obvious crier. Number two, I think she's physically capable of producing tears. I think, you know, mm-hmm. It's hard to tell from the preseason content, but I hope. And then number three, I just feel like she's someone who I just see is not an early boot, not necessarily an in-gamer. So I didn't put her in some of these other categories, but I kind of see her as hanging around long enough to cry.
Yeah. So I have, I had Sabaya as my first boot from the boot list, not necessarily because I think she's going to be the first person voted out, but because I do think that Yellow Tribe is a disaster. I think it's the personalities more than the physical. For this one's tough, because I try in this new era of like, who's going to get the backstory that's going to lead to them crying. That's where it's felt like. And you know what? I'm kind of doing a zig where people zag here with Vaughn. And I'm going to say your winner pick, Emily, is the crier. I'm going to put her down, and I am going to put 2 points for this. And the reason I'm going to put two for it isn't because I'm so confident that she's going to get it, but because a lot of people cry on this show. Like, almost half the cast cries every time. So if you're looking for one that you have a really good chance of hitting, this is one that you do have a better chance of hitting, even though it is such a shot in the dark of will this person cry? Unlike with the blindfold, we don't know if they're actually going to be blindfolded on this season. You know people are going to cry on this season. Survivor's going to give us some content. So I'm going to go with your winner pick. I'm going to put her right in there, and I'm going to put 2 points on it.
I like it.
Cool.
Makes sense. All right.
So
obviously I think she's going to be around a while. So again, the more episodes you're on, the more opportunities you have to cry.
Exactly. 100%. Totally agree. And so if she is, there you go. And I'm going to be like, there she is crying. And then I'm going to feel emotional. And then I'm going to like want her to win instead of thinking she's just like a villain. And here we go. But here's the next one. And so Alexa actually sent me. So Alexa's still doing her homework, even though she's not here on this podcast. But she sent me an article today about Jeff Probst revealing how Survivor will be different in 90 minutes. And this was an Entertainment Weekly article by Dalton. And he was talking about, of course, advantages. It seems like there's going to be some crazy big hidden immunity idol thing. I don't really understand what's going on. It almost feels like an old school hidden immunity idol find, but who really knows? I can't tell really what I'm being pitched on this. But all that being said, there's going to be hidden immunity idols on this season. There's probably going to be a bunch of them, being that they're 90-minute episodes. They want to make sure that the show's exciting, were words that Jeff used in here. I don't think Birdcage is back, even though that was a pretty interesting little twist last season. No matter what's going on, we're looking at who's going to get a hidden immunity idol on this season. So they don't necessarily have to find it, because a Jesse situation would count, where somebody gets voted out and gives them it, and it's their ownership. Like, they own that immunity idol for at least a little bit of a period of time. Doesn't matter if it's only good for one tribal. It doesn't matter if it's good for two tribals. Doesn't matter if it's a normal hidden immunity idol. Doesn't matter if it's the Tyler Perry idol. Whatever it is, they find a hidden immunity idol or get a hidden immunity idol. So who do you have getting this?
I have Sean. So I think that Sean is someone who I think probably has some decent longevity in the game. I like him. And really what this came down to is I see him as a big enough fan of the show that he's going to try to hunt for idols. And also, I just thought it would be apropos considering that he mentioned that Todd inspired mm-hmm. him not only to apply for Survivor, but like in life, they're both gay men with Mormon backgrounds, both in kind of professions that involved a lot of outface, mm-hmm. interface with the public, one being a principal and one being a flight attendant, a little different, but some similarities. And so I think it would be apropos given Todd's ability to find idols in China mm-hmm. if Sean proved to be as adept or as talented and gifted as an idol finder as Todd proved to be. And because I do expect there to be a lot of idols and probably too many advantages, so many that it will make me physically ill by the mm-hmm. merge, I did assign a 3 to this because ooh. I feel like anyone – should go all in here with your idol selection just because they should be free flowing.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. And the person I'm actually going with is Drew. Am I coming through all right? I'm yep. coming through loud, right? Okay, cool. My computer just making a really loud, weird noises. I'm going with Drew, and I'm putting 3 on it. The reason I don't like the yellow tribe, I've talked about that. I think the blue tribe, there's just a lot of places for me to put them. So I'm going to go with Drew here. I feel like Drew is somebody who might be a little bit on the outside of his tribe looking in early on. I don't know. It's hard for me to tell really how all those people are going to get together. But I feel like Drew is coming into this game and he is somebody who is going to nonstop be looking for idols. Like, he's a 22-year-old grad student. He's, I think, the youngest person on the season. Him and Brando are both the same age, so he's one of the youngest people on the season. I feel like he's going to come out there and try to game. And when that happens, that generally leads to taking chances, such as risking a vote to get an idol or something along those lines. So I'm going to go with Drew. I mean, I think last season we might have seen 6 hidden immunity idols or 7 or something. Like, it was an absurd amount because you had ones that only counted for a couple episodes. You had the Birdcage idols. You had regular idols. There's a lot going on here. So for me, you got to put 3 points on this, even if you're not super confident. The other person that I was really considering for this was Brandon, but I wanted to stay away from the yellow tribe because I do feel like if they're going to be the disaster tribe, anything goes, anybody can go home. And even though he's a huge super fan, I just didn't want to put three on him there. So,
yeah, I mean, I think Brandon has some downside of just like if that yellow tribe is a disaster and he's like on the outs and they're going to tribal a lot, then it could be one of those situations where he's like, well, if I look for an idol, I could be putting an even bigger target on my back, mm-hmm. you know? I do feel like Drew is a great pick because I think he kind of has the personality of someone who just kind of wants all the gold stars. You know, yeah. Like he was a trivia national champion. He plays Scrabble competitively. It's just like a hilarious number of like, you know, bizarre. I mean, I think he was like really good in mock trials, like all these like kind of nerdy things that you would check the boxes on. He's done really well at. So I kind of feel like if he gets cast on Survivor, he's not going to be kind of like the risk averse player that's like, okay, now I'm here and I want to win, and I'm going to do that by just hanging out in the camp. You know, like he's going to be going hard. So I think this is a good pick. I could definitely see him finding an idol. Also, I will say we have the same alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania, and he did the classic Penn alum thing in his interview, which only endears him to me, which is that he says, you know, he attended UPenn, the Ivy League, because if you go to Penn, no one knows what school you're talking about. So you always have to follow the name of your school by reminding people that it's an Ivy League. So I appreciate that he did that.
Is that really a thing? Like people don't know UPenn?
Yeah, people don't know UPenn. They think it's Penn State. And so when you're trying to brag, which I mean, or like, you know, humble brag, the kids still mm-hmm. say, I don't know, any Zoomers in the chat, you can let me know if humble brag is still a thing. Mm-hmm. But
I hope you with your campaign now.
I don't know. I need to figure out if the kids are still saying this. But he was kind of humble bragging a little bit. As a you know Gen Z member, he was probably calling it something else, like H brag or something really cool. Mm-hmm. But you know that he went to Penn, and he was very quickly you know said University of Pennsylvania, Ivy League.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's funny because growing up in New Jersey, if I went to like my parents wanted me to go to UPenn, it was like go to Princeton or UPenn, and then I went to Miami, so I was a failure. You know, like it's one of those like we hear about UPenn all the time because when you get the one kid in the neighborhood who goes to UPenn, it's like they're better than you. Don't forget it. You know
that makes sense. Yeah. So I'm from Alabama, so my family would have been much happier had I gone to Miami because they have a football team.
Yeah.
Most of my family member thought I was going to Penn State, but they were very disappointed because Penn State hadn't been good for a long time. You know.
Yeah. So, yeah. There you go. Well, so let's jump into this next one. So this is gets 10 or more votes. This counts votes that are negated by idol play. Now, I want to preface with this so that you can understand too, Vaughn, in case it makes you change your numbers around. In season number 41, it was Shan and Ricard both had 9 votes against them. Liana was the only person to have 10 votes cast against her in that season. So only one person from season 41 had 10 votes cast against them. Lydia had 9 in season 42, and she was the only one, and Chanel also had 9. Nobody had 10. So this is tricky. Season 43, nobody had 10. And then in season 44, which is the last season we just watched, the only person to get 10 votes in that season was Franny. So it doesn't actually happen all that often. Sometimes it's only once or twice per season. Now, it made sense last year because Bruce did go home right away. So anybody who was going home in those early stages maybe weren't getting as many votes because there's one less tribal council or something along those lines. All that being said, who do you have as getting 10 or more votes in this season?
Well, first, I actually do have a logistical scoring question here. I'm mm-hmm. proud of myself for having one. It shows that I'm really listening intently. Yeah. And I'm trying really hard. So do votes to win count? Does that count as a vote?
No, they don't.
See your name on parchment. Okay.
They don't. Right. No.
I wasn't sure about that. But yeah. As a result, I am going to lower my bet here from 3-1. I'm going to make the change that you anticipated. But my answer here is actually my real winner pick, Emily. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this would have been an easier bet if the votes to win counted, but I think that she is the type of player who I think is going to, obviously, I think that she's going to hang around a lot, but she kind of has that sort of in-your-face persona where she's not going to hang around under the radar, mm-hmm. Which is how I like it. I think she's going to be in people's face. She's going to be an active strategist in the season. She's going to be making her own moves. She's going to be seizing her own agency and, you know, her autonomy. And as a result, she's going to ruffle some feathers. She's going to make some enemies along the way. I do think that she'll be able to dodge it. I see her as maybe being able to, especially if the yellow tribe gets decimated, I think some of the stronger yellow tribe or the surviving yellow tribe players will be picked up by the other two tribes post-merge. So I could see her as someone who maybe cops a few votes post-merge from kind of the losing side of the blue-red divide because people think that she's like an easy boot. I think that's really the only way you can get to 10 votes easily is if essentially you're like a failed merge boot, because that's an easy way to bank a bunch of votes right there. So even though it's a little bit fanficky, I think that's where I've landed with Emily.
So I have Caleb here, who is also, he's my like runner up. My winner pick for real is D. And I don't know how much you've listened to us, but it's because I want Bryson Wen to come down to Miami and do something down here. Like, I'm just tired of being outcast from the Survivor community. So I want D to win. That's my real winner pick. But Caleb's kind of been like my 1B. And the reason why I'm picking Caleb here with 1 point is because I think the Yellow Tribe is the disaster tribe. And if they're the disaster tribe, that means there's going to be a lot of tribal councils there early on. Yep. If they go to 3 tribal councils in the pre-merge, and Caleb picks up 1 or 2 votes even, he could be the person people are targeting at the merge, because maybe there's 3 yellow people left, or maybe there's only 2 yellow people left. Maybe he's coming up as a decoy vote or something along those lines, because, oh, we'll get rid of the yellows, and then instead it's really red is taking on blue and they don't realize it or something. I think somebody on the yellow tribe has a good chance of getting this, because they could be really outnumbered just early on, or overmatched.
That was exactly, I failed to mention it, but I was thinking the same thing. And I thought about Caleb for this spot too, and honestly just thought that it was kind of the obvious, no shade, you know, intended, but kind of the obvious pick. So I was worried that it would be really heavily picked, because I feel like Caleb is the classic person where, okay, he picks up a couple early votes. He's a kind of a villainous, brash, in-your-face person. So I think he's a good pick. I mean, maybe he's just the right pick, and then like 70% of the people are going to get it correct. Or maybe he's the right pick, and I'm overvaluing people's evaluation, you know, possibilities for the game. But I think he is a very strong pick. And I also totally feel you about picking D for selfish reasons. That's part of the reason I'm picking Emily, because she's from Maryland. Not only is it cool to have someone from your own state or whatever, I don't think that Bryce and Wendell are necessarily going to come to Maryland. That said, because of my job, I get to do citations for people when they do cool things and invite them to the state capitol. So my big dream of like reality TV fandom is for someone from Maryland to win like Big Brother or Survivor or some show that I like. It's really just those two. And then I can invite them down and it'll be awesome. So I'm thinking that of the two people who live in Maryland from this cast, I'm thinking Emily is my best shot. So that's
who's the other one from Maryland?
Hannah lives in Maryland.
Okay. Well, for your sake, I hope it happens, but for my sake, I hope it's D. Next one is going to be gets 5 or less votes. Also does not count votes to win. And this has to be like votes cast against you. It can't be like somebody wrote your name on a piece of parchment to give you immunity. That doesn't count. Like it is just votes cast against you to go home. Does count votes negated by immunity idols. I'm not even going to give you the stats. This happens a lot in this new era, because the tribe starts small with six person tribes at the beginning. Last season, every single pre-merger, with the exception of Josh, went home with 5 or fewer votes. And Josh went home with more because technically, like, wasn't he like the fake merge boot? So like Josh was at a big tribal council. In these days though, this is something that happens quite often. There's just a lot of small tribal councils. They split the tribes at final 10, things like that. So I will say mine first, because I'm putting 3 points on it and I want to go first. I am saying Jamaya, and I'm putting 3 on it. And my reason is this: Jamaya easily could be the first boot of this season. If she is, she's only getting 5 votes. If she's the second boot of this season and she's the decoy vote for the first vote, she's still getting 5 votes, because it would be a 5-1 in all likelihood. It's almost always unanimous at the start. And then she'd go home 4-1. So there's 5 votes. If Jamaya isn't, if she does fit in with the tribe and she's not somebody getting votes in the pre-merge, she hits the merge, this is not somebody that you are looking to get rid of right away. I know we've seen some weird people go at that fake merge time. We saw Lydia go and we saw Sydney. Like, we have seen like female characters go in the role that used to be reserved for like the strongest man alive. But I don't think Jamaya would make sense there. So I'm going to put Jay Maya here with 3 points, getting 5 or less votes, because I think either she's going to go really deep and barely get votes to get there, or she's going to go really early and there's just not going to be enough votes to give her. And if it's a revote, so here's another clarification. If it's a 3-3 tie and they revote, it's not like it's 3-3 plus 2. It's just those first votes.
Yeah, I like that pick. I like the idea of Jay Maya going early or going really late. I thought similarly about this, which is that I really want here to pick a pre-merger. That's just like the cleanest and the easiest way to get those 5 votes banked. So I went with, unfortunately, the other Marylander, Hannah, here. So Hannah, I think of anyone in the cast because where she lives and because of the age gap, which is limited between me and her, I kind of feel like she's probably the person in the cast I'm most likely to be friends with at any point in my life. So I don't mean any hard feelings here. She actually seems awesome. I hope I'm wrong that she's an early boot because she seems like a confessional machine. Mm-hmm. I think that if she's not an early boot, she's definitely going to hit a lot of these other prop bet categories like confessionals in the season, or maybe like episode title, maybe even like blurred mouth. She could do a lot of these for you. Mm-hmm. So she's a really interesting piece, I think, when everyone is going to be filling out their prop bet. Where they place Hannah is interesting because I feel like if you think she's an early boot, okay. But if she's not an early boot, if we're all wrong, she could really bank some points for you in a bunch of these other categories. I thought that she was really dynamic in her interview. And I thought that, you know, she talked about her like she, you know, went sober and said that she had a 5-year drinking career. I also really loved, I mean, I always fall for the therapist. So this is me basically like getting out of the therapist game. Mm-hmm. But I did like how she was like self-aware about how the therapist job like wasn't actually meaningful. I wish someone had told me this like 5 years ago before I started picking all these therapists to win the season. Because she was totally like, yeah, like we don't know what we're talking about. We're just like totally winging it here. Like who knows what, like this is not the real advantage on the show. So I love that. I love her just generally, but man, this tribe, just as everyone has said, just seems like a disaster waiting to happen. And when you go through the people who I think could maybe survive that early onslaught and people who can't, she's just, to me, the person who seems least likely to be able to survive. I just feel like she doesn't necessarily have any like obvious allies that she's going to be able to cling to. Mm-hmm. Like I don't see her necessarily bonding with Emily, even though they're both sort of women around the same age. I just don't know if their personalities are going to work together. And then at that point, who is she really going to pair up with? Maybe she finds like one other pair, you know, like Sean or something. And then they're outnumbered 4-2. I don't know. I just feel like it's not going to end well. I like her chances of getting 5 votes.
How many points you put on it?
I'm going 3.
Going 3. All right. All right. We're up to number 6. Will win individual immunity. Who you got?
I have someone you mentioned earlier, and that's Austin. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a little bit of a chalk pick, so I'm kind of going against my zigzag strategy here. I feel like he's kind of obvious, but looking at the field, I wanted to pick a woman because, you know, women have been doing so good at puzzles. But I kind of felt like people would be onto that and a lot of people would be picking women. So I kind of tried to zig here and go with someone who is just kind of an obvious person who could win comps because he's like smart enough where I think he could be good at the puzzle element. You know, so many of the challenges just come down to puzzles at this point. It's not like a brute strength thing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he's got kind of the body type where he's muscular enough that he could beat a lot of people in just sheer brawn competitions. But he's also sort of, I think, like just nimble enough to win some agility comps or some balance comps as well. So I just feel like he's a really well-rounded potential challenge competitor. I think he's on a pretty good tribe. I don't see him going out early. He's compared himself to a few people that were pretty good at comps. And so, you know, I think he's kind of a chalky pick, but I like his chances and I'm assigning 3 points to Austin winning at individual immunity.
So I am going with somebody else who I think will not be chalky. So I'm going to actually go completely against you. I was between Sifu and Jake. I'm on Jake because I'm only putting 2 on it because there's actually been a lot less disparity in who's winning individual immunities. I feel like in recent seasons, that might not be true for every season, but I do feel like from 41 to 44, it was like a lot of the same people. Like Carla won a lot. Owen won a lot. Like I feel like we were seeing a lot of similar winners. So I'm going to go with Jake because it has been the unexpected people who are winning these challenges. Like when you look at these cat, like when Gabler won his challenge of holding the thing, he beat Sammy at that. I think he beat Owen at that. Like who's expecting 50-year-old Gabler, whatever, however old he was, going out there and winning that challenge. It's not what you're thinking is going to happen. So I'm going with Jake. I feel like these challenges are a lot more random now. There's a lot more luck involved, but also like just a lot more like knowledge of Survivor and like what to look for. It's almost like, can you figure out the trick before everybody else can figure out the trick? So I'm going to go with Jake. I'm only putting two on it, but that is my pick.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like, I like Jake a lot. I think, you know, part of this selection, really, like, half the battle here is just picking someone who's going to play in a few individual immunity challenges.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's really, you can just, if you're good enough to just pick someone who will play in, like, two or three challenges, you've got a really good shot at getting, you know, some points here.
Yep. All right, we'll wear a blindfold. Now, Vaughn, I am notoriously terrible at this. I almost always pick somebody who's not. The one time I even said this person will never be the caller, that's why they're blindfolded, and then they were the caller. I forget who it was, but I remember being made fun of relentlessly. So who's going to wear a blindfold? Are we even going to see a blindfold challenge on this season?
Who knows? I feel like they've really shied away from the blindfolds in the new era because it's kind of like needlessly painful for people. And
they had it last season, though, right?
They did, but it was the first time in a while, right? I don't know. So I don't know if it's going to be a repeat of last season. Maybe we'll see it. I went here actually with someone who I really like. So it's kind of a weird kind of throwaway pick to slot them here. But I actually agree with you. I like D a lot. And I'm putting her as the blindfolded person. And actually, when I was kind of making a short list of people to win, she was actually on my short list. But then I saw how much you loved her. So I was like, okay, well, I can't just repeat what Phil says. So I struck her entirely. So I instead have her listed here because you think about the blindfold challenge. You generally are going to pick the caller, you know, overwhelmingly are male, if you look historically, and overwhelmingly, if they are female, they're people with like deep, booming, outlandish personality, like voices and like outlandish personalities. And so I feel like D here is a safe pick because number one, I don't think her tribe is going to lose a whole lot. So I think that she'll make it to the blindfold. I think if they do lose, I don't see her as the boot. So that's check one. Check two, she's not a guy. And check three, I don't think of the women that she is going to be one of the ones who is sort of putting herself in this kind of hero role to scream really loud. So I see her as a safe pick, but because I'm not sure they're going to do the competition, I'm going to assign 1 point.
Yep. I am picking a rando here and I'm picking Kendra. I have been very open about not feeling like I know much about Kendra at all coming into this. I feel like her answers in her bio weren't thorough. Not like really, like I'm not sitting here being like, come on, give me more. I don't feel like I know much about her. And from that blue tribe, if I had to say who was going to go home if they lost, I'm picking her. That's kind of who I've been going with consistently. So I'm just going to put her here at blindfold because I don't really know where else to put her. And I'm just going to say, like, if they don't do the blindfold challenge, I'm fine losing a point. And maybe they'll do the blindfold challenge early enough in the season that Kendra is a part of it. So I'm going to put her there with 1 point.
I like that. Makes sense.
All right. We'll make the jury. So who is going to make the jury? Now, if for some reason there is a Neil Gottlieb situation of removal from the jury, as long as you're on it at some point, you count. So who do you have making the jury?
Well, you actually alluded to this earlier when you picked your winner. I've got Bruce making the jury at 3 points. You said if he wasn't your winner, you were going to put him here. Mm-hmm. I had already slotted him in here. Kind of a chalky pick, but just goes back to our conversation earlier. I don't think he's going early. I think the goodwill from last season is enough to at least get him to the mergatory sort of section of the game. And so he really only needs to last, I think, a couple of boots here in like the fourth to fifth boot range, sixth boot, you know, range to really make the jury, just because I feel like he's so clearly not going to be an early pre-merger. So I really like his chances. I'm putting 3 points on it.
Yeah, I'm going with Sifu, and I'm putting 3 points on it. I feel like the red tribe would be crazy to get rid of him early. I do feel like when you look at that tribe, he is blatantly, him and Austin are blatantly who they're trying to get the strength from. In my opinion, I do feel like that when you look at that tribe compared to the others, it feels like maybe they don't have all the physical strength. And I know that Survivor has done much more of trying to level that out after the Lesu 3 situation. So I feel like they did this on purpose. I feel like Sifu is going to be really useful. I feel like Sifu, kind of like an Orion Medrano situation where he's going to go like just far enough, but like never really be a threat to win the game. Also said he loves New School Survivor, so he's on my shit list. But I'm going to have him make the jury anyway. I got 3 points on it. I think it's a big one. Once he hits the merge, there's no way they're going to let this guy get too deep. And I feel like we're going to see that in the edit very early on, because we never really felt like Ryan could win. Ryan, like, he was likable, but it always felt like there was something off with Ryan and his winning, like, chances. So I'm going to put Sifu here, put 3 points on it. And, yeah, it would have been Bruce, but I had to give Bruce some love and put him in there as well. All right. Number 9, one that we almost got rid of, and then it happened like 4 seasons in a row. Troyzan's done it. Aubrey's done it. I think Carla did it. We, like, literally, it's gotten to the point now where we don't even, like, comment on it as much. We used to be so stoked when it would happen because we would get so close to taking it away. This is Hugs Jeff. So they just go over and give Jeff a hug after they win immunity, something like that. I mean, when Troyzan did it, we literally thought that he was, like, a huge avid Survivor Specialist fan. Because at that point, he had also, like, reached out to us and contacted us. And then when the hug happened, he's like, why was that a big deal? And we were like, you don't even understand. And really, I don't even understand. This is the definition of a throwaway and a shot in the dark. Who do you think is giving Jeff some hugs on this?
Yeah, season? I struggled to which direction I was going to go here. And ultimately, kind of did a sort of, let's see which names are still left in the pile strategy. Mm-hmm. But I am going with Brandon. With an okay. N, because I think he's just one of the biggest super fans on the cast. He seems to know a lot of former players. He is, you know, clearly like a, you know, just a huge nerd about the show. I do worry about how long he's going to last being on that tribe. And so I kind of limit my chances of him hugging Jeff, like a challenge or something like that, if he's not around very much. But I do think that he's the kind of person that's probably heard about the whole hugging Jeff thing, either from this podcast or another. Like, he's just definitely in it. You know, like, he's in this community 100%, much more than any other player, I think. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's heard of this phenomenon and just wants to make at least check that box, even if they don't do very well overall, I think it would be Brandon. But I am going to do 1 point.
Yeah. I like that reasoning. You know, let's get really, really meta here, and let's let the Survivor Specialist feel important for a day.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm going with Sean here for 1 point, very similar to the Kendra one. This isn't something that always happens. So I'm putting somebody that I don't know where else to put him. And I think Sean could be a very early vote, but I'm also very concerned to put Sean as a, you know, has a confession on every episode he's in, because if he does go 5 or 6 episodes, I don't think he has such a big personality that he's going to get a confessional in every episode. Like last season, Carolyn Jam Jam and Carson all got confessionals in every episode. Franny, I don't think did. I don't think Matt did. Like, these are people who are huge characters on the season, but aren't necessarily eating up screen time in every single episode. So I'm going to go with Sean with 1 here for Hugs Jeff. And, you know, maybe he'll do something that just, you know, makes Jeff be like, yeah, like, get over here and give me a hug. I have no idea. When Aubrey did it the one time, I thought she was going to kill Jeff. It was like a Brian Urlacher tackle. I know that's an outdated reference now, but it was insane how hard she hit him. It was unbelievable. So I'm back. I needed a drink of water, but I'm back. Okay. And no, my water is not
a Urlacher reference. You know, yeah, that took a lot out of you. You had to really kind of go back in the crevices of your mind there.
I'm thinking about Jackass when they just let him just like destroy them and they like can't breathe. It's like, yeah, he could kill you. But I just want to make it clear that the water in Florida is not orange. This is an emergency. So I know I said I need a drink of water. But all right, we'll sit out 3 or more times, like we said, for any reason. So it could be for food, could be just because you're picked to sit out. You weren't picked, Carl, back when he didn't get to play for his beer. Any reason at all, 3 times, a little bit tough in the new era because it has been a little bit more even between the tribes and we aren't getting reward challenges really at all. And Jeff said that's not going to change because they're still only playing 26 days. It might be 90 minutes, but it's only 26 days. So not as many opportunities, but who are you seeing as somebody who could do this?
I'm going to go with Kendra here.
Okay.
I think that she's on the tribe that everyone sort of thinks is going to be the physically strongest. I could see them break off a few immunity wins early. So if they're at the point where they need sit outs, I also think that she has enough of a self-described woo girl personality that she's kind of offbeat enough. She kind of fits into that archetype of kind of the crazy, you know, sort of hippie lady that she could do some weird stuff in terms of sitting out for food or sandwiches if she were to make it further in. So I like her odds here. Three times, as you say, is a tough bar. But if you look at the Blue Tribe, there are a few other people that maybe could be the physical liabilities. You know, you look at someone like Brando being a pretty small guy and kind of nerdy. But I want to think that they maybe keep him on there for the puzzle or for the end game of the early immunity challenges. And then you look through, you're definitely not going to get rid of Bruce. I don't think they're going to get rid of Jake. And then you're kind of down to the three other women on the tribe. And it's kind of difficult to parse who is going to be the more or the less athletic among them. Mm-hmm. But I went with Kendra here just because I feel like she's got the upside of being on blue, plus maybe the upside of doing kind of some weird stuff and not playing later.
I like that pick. I'm also going with the Blue Tribe. I was between Keturah and Brando. And it's tough between the two of them because I don't really know what Keturah's physical game is going to be like. I assume Brando, as a software developer, will probably try to get in on some puzzle portions, even if he's not the most physically fit. So I'm really trying to figure out, like, okay, where does Keturah fit in when they all line up to do a challenge? I feel like she could end up sitting out. I have really high hopes for Keturah. I think Keturah could go really deep in this game. She was also one of the people who I'd been thrown around as a potential winner for this season. I'm going to put her as the three-time sit-out. I'm only going to put 1 point on it because it hasn't happened often. I'm assuming, Kendra, you're also doing 1 point.
I'm actually going to do three. I'm going all in on this one.
Yep. Okay, so you're going to go all in on this. I'm going to just do one because it hasn't happened that often. And the biggest issue with the three tribes is if it's two tribes and you win the first one and then you win the second, you're guaranteed to be sitting somebody out. Challenge, 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 challenge. Like, it's happening if there's no tribe swap. With three tribes, you can win the first one. You sit somebody out in the next the next episode, and then your team loses. Now you're guaranteed not to sit somebody out for multiple weeks because you need the tribe that has the most people to lose one of the next two in order for you to get that advantage again. So it's a little bit harder with three tribes, which is why I am going to put just 1 point on it for Qatar. All right. This one should happen a lot more this season. This has been happening quite a bit, actually, in recent seasons, but this should really happen a lot more this season. 10 or more confessionals in a single episode. 90 minutes. We should be getting this. We go based on Reddit. I forget the person who's what their name is, but they always post the confessional count. If it's not there, we go to Sucks. Like, there's ways to find it. I think our Rob has a podcast, somebody has a fact checker or something. I forget what the guy calls himself, but there are options for finding this for 10 or more confessionals in an episode. We generally go by the one that's on Reddit.
Work smarter, not harder. I love it.
Exactly. Who do you think is just going to be hogging some screen time here?
I've got Brando here, and I'm definitely going to assign 3 points. I feel like Brando is clearly going to be kind of the fun, nerdy, class clowny, super fan type here. And I think he's going to be a really good narrator, and I think he's probably going to last a while. I just thought that he had like a lot of really clever things to say in his interview. So I was impressed. He mentioned like that he wants an alliance member who, you know, picks up the pieces he missed. In other words, he wants to team up with someone who maybe has some strengths that he doesn't have. You don't oftentimes see people say that, but I think it's, you know, relatively insightful. I also thought it was really interesting. I never heard this, that he wanted to team up with someone who he would like if they won. Because in this new era of, like, he mentioned Jesse and Cody, basically someone getting betrayed, like your closest ally betraying you down the stretch. Chan comes to mind. He also mentioned her. He wanted it to be someone that he was, like, comfortable taking really far and then maybe potentially betraying him and then winning the season. I thought that was kind of an interesting insight that I never heard before. I also thought it was funny that he said that he wanted to try the Survivor pizza and that it was also often, like, you know, he compared it to like Chicago style pizza, like Survivor style pizza. I just thought that he had like a lot of really clever things to say that were interesting. Even the Edge of Extinction thing, you know, like, who's saying that other than me? Because I got Chris Underwood to win that season. He was the winner pick. But other than that, who is saying that they like the Edge of Extinction twist? I just think that he's going to be on the cutting edge of saying like witty comments, narrating the events. And especially with these 90-minute episodes, I feel very confident, 3 points, that Brando is going to have at least one episode with 10 confessionals or more.
Yeah, I'm going with Brandon. Isn't that somebody who also said they liked Edge of Extinction? I believe they both
said. Oh, maybe I'm getting Brando and Brandon confused.
You know, I might have created this for Brandon, and I'm just, like, hating on him for no reason. But I do feel like they both said they like Edge of Extinction. And it's Brando definitely said it, but I feel
that's
like
that's what
Brando,
the Zoomers like these days. They like it's they've all said like, you know, Edge of Extinction is not mid at all. It's actually I don't know, elite. I don't know. What are they saying?
As somebody who will never run for political office, Zoomers like dumb shit, man. I can't handle it. I can't handle it.
They're our future.
They are the future. Yes, exactly. And what is it? VoteForDevon.com. Is that what we're looking for? But I really think that Brandon in this first episode, even if Brandon goes home, if he's the first boot of this, if he, and I know Jacob Derwin didn't go home in the first episode, but if he, Jacob Derwin, fizzles out, he is going to eat up the screen. He is going to be huge. He loves this game. You talked about it. He is very in with the community. He knows everyone. He's a part of it. He's a content producer. He almost reminds me of a normal Survivor fan version of Coach, where he's going to know how to get confessionals. He's not going to be over the top in the way of like, he likes, like, you know, he's going to be going on like some journey or whatever. But he is somebody who knows that if he says he likes Jack and Jill, they're going to air that. And I think that's what Coach was great at. And I think that's what
buddy games, baby. It's all about buddy games.
It's all about it. And like, how can I ensure that if I go home early or even late, that I am playing Survivor again? Love Brandon. I got three on it for 10 or more confessionals in a single episode.
I like that. I mean, I think the only question mark there is if you think someone could be an early boot, how easy is it going to be to get 10 confessionals? I just genuinely don't know. In a three tribe season in 90 minutes, like, do they feel like they're going to show even more content on the other two tribes than they would have normally, and they're going to give us the same amount of time with like the losing tribe, or are they going to beef up the role of the losing tribe and show you even more dynamics? Like, I don't know. Clearly, if it's the latter, and Brandon goes out at any time, I feel like anyone that goes out early is going to cruise to 10 plus confessionals.
Yeah, the thing is, if you really go back and look through Survivor history, when they do longer 90 to 2 hour episodes, they really like bounce around a lot. And you'll get like Carolyn, Mama C had like 12 or 13 confessionals in the premiere of season 30. I think Mama C ended that season with like 35 confessionals or something. Like, she barely had anything after that, but she was huge in that first episode. I think another, I keep saying his name and I apologize, but Scoopin had, I think, 8 in the first episode and then went 4 straight episodes with nothing. So they do try to beef people up in this early episode when there's more time. So that's why I'm going with Brandon there. Moving on to number 12. So 2/3 of the way through now, we'll have their mouth blurred. And I'm just going to say mine now because it's the easiest thing in the world. And I'm putting 3 points on it. I have Hannah. Hannah is going to curse and she's going to curse and she's going to curse. In her thing about her Survivor hot take, she's getting her mouth blurred. Like, and they can't edit around it. That's what that tells me, is like CBS and Entertainment Weekly and stuff can't even edit around her cursing. She is getting her mouth blurred. 3 points, done. Doesn't matter how long she's in the game.
I like that one. I was just what you said at the last part is what I have been concerned about. Like, is she in there long enough to get a blur? I don't know. Probably. That's probably right. But I went with Keturah here. Mm-hmm. I also feel like, you know, civil rights lawyer, you know, she's super legit. I mean, she actually works with NAACP Legal Defense Fund, which is not just like any old civil rights firm, but as the civil rights firm. So she's an extremely accomplished person who I'm high on. Part of this was just, I kind of ran out of a good slot for her, but I kind of see her just around the game for a while. And so that was what I was really going for here, is I think anyone's capable of cursing in front of the cameras at the end of the day, except for maybe, I don't know. I feel like they all are.
They all curse.
I don't know. I feel like they all are. There's no one that comes to mind that's just not going to curse actively. Maybe Julie is a little bit too like motherly. I don't know. But anyway, I think anyone can curse. I just thought of the people I had left, I thought Keturah had sort of the best upside to go a long way and therefore just to get more screen time. And she definitely doesn't seem like someone who would shy away from cursing on national television. However, I was not as confident as you, and I did go 1.
Okay. All right. I do like it. I think it makes sense. But okay, so here's question number 13. Who will have a confessional in every episode they're in? So now if they make the jury members don't get confessional, so that doesn't count against them. It's only the episodes they're in as a player in the game. So who do you have? This could be somebody who goes home very early, because in the first episode or two, they're always making sure, unless your name is Hope They really make sure to give you confessionals in the first two episodes if you go home early. But if you go deep, it starts to become harder. I mean, Danny was a big personality on that Green Tribe last year, and he did not have a confessional in every episode. So what do you got?
Yeah, so I really – those two things I did struggle with, and I wasn't sure which one to go. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of hard to pick who the early boots are. I feel like it's almost easier, like historically, at least for me, to pick people who I'm like, you know what, this guy is going to be a big force on this season. That's honestly sometimes easier. You know, they get a lot of early content. Their early, you know, preseason interviews pop off the screen. Sometimes it's easier to pick some of these people, not necessarily winners, but people that are going to be big personalities of the season than it is the early boots. So that's why I was kind of going back and forth on there. I also just feel like, okay, let's say you're right. You pick an early boot, but they go third or fourth. They're probably getting invisible content in like episodes one and two, you know, and then maybe it spikes in three and four. So I was worried about that too. So I ended up going with Caleb.
Okay.
I think, like you alluded to earlier, I think he's got some good longevity in the game. I like everything he said. I like the idea that he roots for the villains. I like how he just straight up said that he's looking for alliance members he can emotionally manipulate. Like, you know, we need, you know, this goes back to my rant earlier that I teased. I mean, we just need more villains on this show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think I'm as down on the new era of the season or the show as you are. I did actually really like last season. They got kind of lucky, I think, narrative wise. The Tika three were sort of underdogs that had their back against the wall, and they were all super likable and interesting people in their own right. So they got kind of lucky with the boot order. But man, I think this show could really use some unlikable people, and not just like really villains in the sense of Caleb, who's kind of villain in a fun way. We just don't get enough like just bad people anymore. Like if you go back and rewatch some of the older seasons, like I have, like there are a lot of people, you know, it's not even so much like I used to think, oh, we need fewer super fans. Like that's the problem. Like we have too many super fans. What made the old seasons good was we had a bunch of regular people in regular jobs from regular parts of the country, and they didn't know what they were doing, and that was fun. And I think that some of that, I still believe that to some extent, but I really think like going through some last rewatches I did of some of these old seasons, like pre like China, like really what made a lot of these seasons fun is the people they would cast were just legitimately awful humans. And that made the show fun, because guess what? If you want a social experiment that includes people of all different walks of life, that includes people who are POSs, you know?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we just don't really get that much. And look at this season. Like, I kind of like everybody. Like, I'm sure enough people will get on my nerves here and there for a couple episodes, and a few people will get me to root against them in a variety of ways. But there's not going to be anyone that I just genuinely hate, like I did in earlier seasons, where I was like, oh my God, I'm praying for their downfall. They seem like such a terrible person. We just don't get that anymore, and it's sad. And I think going forward, you know, in future seasons, I don't know if any, you know, casting folks are listening, maybe so, maybe not. But if I had to say one thing, the advice, you know, from lowly me, like, what do I know? I'm going to end up scoring like 4 points in this prop bet game. You know, I don't know a whole lot, but I feel like if we just had a couple more just bad people, it could make the season sing a little bit more.
I completely agree. And what's funny nowadays, in the social media age, it's become tough for people to just be downright assholes, because we hit that period of time where like you said something wrong on TV and now your life is over. You lose your job, you lose this. Like, I don't want to call it cancel culture, because there was a part of cancel culture that like made sense. But then there was also a part of cancel culture where it's like, these people, like Johnny Fairplay, would not be allowed to lie and say his grandma died and then fake it in 2023. Like, you just can't do that. But Johnny Fairplay, Russell Hantz, Shane Powers, like even Courtney Merritt, who like isn't the villain like those people, but is so entertaining and kind of clueless about how she's perceived by people in Panama. It's awesome. Like, it's fantastic. And nowadays when you say, like, I wish we had more mean people, one, the survivors don't like to hear that. They're like, oh, would it really be better if we were all mean to each other? And like,
this social media world, just a couple of bad people. Just a couple of people who just genuinely suck.
And the thing is, like, Johnny Fairplay on the show was such a piece of shit, but in real life is fine.
Yeah.
So, like, find – what they really need to find is this. They need to find the people who are willing
to
just be the heel.
Yeah,
that's it. They don't need to lean in as hard as fair play, but be willing to lie about Katrina.
I like cancel culture, for the record. I like when people get canceled for saying shitty things. I think that a lot of the times people should be, careers should be ruined for being racist and sexist and stuff. I like that. But we need people on the show that are so bad, just rotten to the core, that they don't even care about that.
Who's like, the worst person on Samoa? Let me ask you this. Who's the worst person on Samoa?
I don't know. What's the correct answer here?
Ben.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody talks about Russell Hance, but it's Ben.
I totally even forgot he was on that season. Exactly. Yeah. He's exactly the kind of archetype I'm thinking here that we're just totally lacking. Like, you watch the first, like, 3 or 4 episodes of Samoa, and you're like, oh, my God, this effing guy sucks. Yeah. I genuinely hope bad things happen to him. And it sets up a narrative that ends up being really satisfying. Because just like a movie, when the villain comes out, you don't want the villain to be like, oh, I kind of see where they're coming from, you know? Yeah. Or like, oh, like, I actually, like, I like them a little bit, you know? Or they're fun. You want to actively hate the villain. And the more you hate them, and the more you think they're evil and cruel and despicable, their downfall is that much more delicious.
Yeah.
And we're just not getting that. Like watch the first 2 episodes of any of those old school seasons, Samoa included, and there will be like 3 or 4 people that you are like, oh man, they suck.
Yeah.
And then you watch any modern season, and down the line, at least me, I find maybe I like people too much. I don't know. But like, I find myself, for pretty much every person, they're going through like their arduous backstories and their heroic, you know, rise from rags to riches or overcoming adversity. And pretty much every single person, even if I didn't like love them preseason, I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
That person rocks. Like, if I had a beer with that person, I would be really impressed. It'd be an awesome night. And I feel like we could use like maybe maximum 3 people each season where everyone is just like, oh my God, they are trash.
When Jesse and Josh are supposed to be your villains, like, it's not working. Ricard was supposed to be a villain. Like, that's not true. Like, Ricard was the fan favorite. Jesse was the fan favorite, but they're supposed to be the villains. What made Jesse villainous was because he voted for Gabler. How dare he, to win $1 million. That's what made everybody on the internet hate him. Not
people even calling like Omer a villain for a couple weeks. Like
because
he's
a strategist.
I know. I mean, villain has gone from like basically being someone who's just absolutely going to burn in hell to like someone who just like cuts a couple of people, like plays the game.
Going to burn in hell and so stoked about it. Like, you need your Disney villain. Like, you need your Jafar of like, I don't care how bad I am.
Those people exist. Like, the world has not gotten like nicer since 2000.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't like fewer shittier people. But if you watch Survivor from season 1 to season 45, you would think that this country has gone under a massive transformation where everyone has sunny personalities and is well-read and is amazing to be around.
Which is funny because the country's probably hasn't been this divided in like 200 years. When in 2000, 2001, 2002, that was when the country was freaking united. Like after 9/11, that was when the country was the most united and everybody hated Jerry and everybody hated like Lex and like, I mean, and Jerry and Lex.
I mean, you literally had Boston Rob being mean about Big Tom's son in a confessional after they had been friends for like 2 years and gone to all these events. He's like calling out Bucky Bowe and calling him like a moron on a show that like half the nation was watching.
Yep.
And then Lex and Big Tom literally just never talked to Boston Rob for years. Yeah. You know, like we don't have that hostility anymore. Like, that's the sign of some true assholes. Not that I don't love me some Boston Rob.
Oh, yeah.
But like, these days, the cast, and I like that they do this. I'm glad that it's a good experience for them. And I don't want people like to be like crushed emotionally, obviously. But like, after every season, everyone just like parties and like comes together and everyone loves each other. And there is a side of that I like. But in terms of sheer entertainment of the show, it'd be nice if there were a couple of feuds.
Yeah.
Most of the people that feud on social media are from like season, like, you know, 16 through what, you know, like, or they're from older seasons. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. And I mean, like, when you follow on social media too, like, a lot of times people from older seasons might try to like egg on people from newer seasons, and the people from newer seasons just like ignore them. Like, it's really crazy. And
they're better people. They're better people. And that's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame that good people get opportunities. How many points did you have for Caleb before your rant?
3.
Okay. I am going with Austin here, and I'm going to put 2. Because it doesn't happen all that often, but it happens pretty often. I think Austin's going to go deep in the game. I think he'll be a really good confessional guy. The problem is I don't see a Carolyn or Jam Jam on this season. There's nobody who is popping off my screen in a way where I'm like, yeah, no duh, they're going to get a confessional in every episode. I even felt kind of that way with Jesse because his story was so crazy. That's not happening for me this season. There's nobody where I'm like, duh. So I'm going to put Austin, I'm going to put two. And that's just, I think Austin's going to go far though. Normally I would try to maybe go with somebody, and if it's not a huge personality, somebody who I think is going to go home early, but instead I'm going to go with him. So now this next one, 40 or more confessionals in a season, which doesn't sound like much, but it actually is quite a bit. Like Parvati Shallow, when she won Fans versus Favorite, barely hit this. I think she like almost didn't. She might not have, from what I can remember. But anyway, like this is not something that always happens, even with some of the most iconic players in the history of the show. So who do you have getting 40 or more confessionals this season?
Well, first, I am going to assign 3 points to this, even though, because I know it's rare, because, you know, we are increasing the length of the show by 50%. So if you do increase the confessional totals from some of our most beloved players by 50%, you actually will find that like a handful or more hit 40 every year. So I'm actually thinking that this could be a really good opportunity for some points. I struggled over who to pick, and I ended up going with Jamaya. And you mentioned earlier that she could either be a late boot or she could be someone that has some longevity in the game. And I'm going to put my chips in on the latter. Even though she's very Zoomer, you know, she's like got into Harvard Law, but screw it. I'm going to pivot to songwriting. And she's 24 and she lives in San Francisco. She apparently was into competitive punning, like making puns competitively, which I did not know was a thing, but is cool. And she was also apparently like a star debater. Now she's in the music industry. She mentioned apparently her music is, did you listen to any of this stuff? Apparently her musical genre she described as nerd pop.
I have not listened.
I'm intrigued. Apparently she's kind of like TikTok famous a little bit too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't heard of her, but then I saw the TikTok numbers and I was like, I probably should have heard of her.
Yeah, I am barely on TikTok, so I have not heard of her either, but I'm intrigued here. So I don't know how good of a player she'll be. I like her. I hope that she does well. But I could see her having enough juice to hit 40. I think in this new 90-minute era that may be brief, I hope it'll be long. I'm kind of looking forward to the 90 minutes. But in this new era, I think it's going to be a lot easier to hit 40. She seems to me that if she can get past that little like hurdle pre-merge, I feel like not only can she make it deep, maybe she's not going to be getting a whole lot of votes. Like you said, maybe she's going to be coasting, but I think she's going to be doing it in a way that she gets some screen time just because I think she's like a fun personality. I think that she's going to be willing to drag people. I think that she's going to have some good wordplay. I think she'll also be a good narrator. There are a lot of those types of people that I think you can slot in. Like the prop bet list overall is like very heavy towards like wordplay enthusiasts, right? Yes. Because between all the confessional stuff and then who's getting the episode title and whatnot, like it pays to like sort of pick your wordplay aficionados well. And I just feel like Jamaya has the juice here. And so I'm going with her 40 plus, and I'm assigning 3 points to it.
Yeah, I'm going with D for this. And my reasoning isn't so much for the social play. It's because I think she's going to go really deep in the game. And if you're sitting in the final three with 90-minute episodes every week, I think you're guaranteed probably closer to 50 confessionals. I think like even like Troyzan back in 34, they would have found a way to give him more screen time if they had 90 minutes. So I like D here. I have her with 3 points. I think she's going to go deep. I think she will have confessionals. I think she's final six. Like I really do. I'm not just saying that. Like I think she has, as you would say, a very high floor. She really does. And that's good. So I'm putting three on her. And that's what I got.
Makes sense. Like I said, I'm also a believer. I only shied away because I realized that you were such a believer. She does fit your archetype a little bit better than mine, I would say. But I'm drinking the D Kool-Aid, the sweet D, if you will. And so I like that pick. If you think she's going deep, I think in 90-minute episode seasons, I think 40 should be a walk in the park.
Should be a guarantee.
Unless you're like a zero vote finalist who they tried to hide for most of the season. I just feel like most of the in gamers are going to hit it this time.
The zero vote finalists have been killing it in New School era.
Yeah,
they really have. I mean, even Romeo, like, had, he was probably the least edited out of the zero vote finalists, and he got a pretty good amount.
Or maybe like the quiet, like, fifth or sixth place person who gets booted at the beginning of the finale, who they kind of try to avoid. Like, maybe they don't hit 40.
Yeah.
But I feel like pretty much, like, if you make the penultimate episode or something, you're going to hit 40.
Yeah. All right. Number 15, who's going to have an episode title?
I went with Drew here. So I think that Drew is another person. I don't think necessarily he's going to be as sort of as great with the wordplay as some of these other people that we've mentioned, but I do think he's a clever guy, and he did, you know, Scrabble competitively and trivia and all this stuff. I feel like he's got at least one good zinger in him to give us an episode title. And he also just, I think, is going to be around a while, as I think you alluded to earlier. I just think that he's got some longevity. I don't see him as an early boot. I don't necessarily see him as someone who's going to be targeted on the Red Tribe if they do lose early. And the longer he's in there, the longer, more chances he has for an episode title. I don't know what the statistics are here in terms of, like, how many different players are able to get.
They,
like,
spread it around.
Yeah, they spread it around really well.
You're probably looking at, like, 9 different players. Who
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I feel pretty good about that, that this is an easier one to bank points on. So even though I can't say there's anything about Drew particularly that just, like, screams episode title, because this is kind of a random selection process, just because of the odds here, I'm going to go with 3 points.
3 points. All right. So you're doing 1 point for your last three things.
Correct.
Okay.
I did not screw up the math.
Okay, good. No, I'm keeping track. I'm keeping track as okay. we go. For my episode title, I am going with Julie, and I'm putting 2, and I don't have much of a reason for this. I just didn't really know where to put Julie. Julie is somebody I could definitely see going home early, but if you listen to Julie, like, her like pregame stuff is really good. She is really exciting. She's really fun. She's really loud. She is her. She talks. I think she has a really good chance of saying something almost in, like, a Sandy way that makes people go, wow, got to put that as the episode title. And especially, like, I think she'll have a very gung-ho attitude in the early episodes. Having a gung-ho attitude is huge.
It's huge. I really like Julie, just an aside. Like, I agree. I really was impressed with her. I love her entire story. Like, I don't know if you saw the whole thing about how she was, like, an art teacher.
Yep.
And then she went through a divorce. And maybe I just think this is cool because I'm an attorney, but, like, she was in the lawyer's office for the mediation for her divorce. And someone was like, oh, are you one of the new associates? And apparently that triggered somewhere in her, like, huh, I should be an attorney. So then, like, 4 years later, she has her law degree after doing, like, law school at night while she, like, was a single mom and taught art. And now she's, like, been practicing law for 5 years at 49. I think she's awesome. She actually does the same kind of law that I practice in my spare time when I'm not legislating, which is estate planning, which is a not super exciting area of the law, but can be a little bit fun. I also think that she just looks great for 49. Yeah. I never really say this about, like, the older women, I guess. I have to put older women in quotes, like, more and more. I have to do more quotations now that I'm now solidly in my mid-30s. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's in their 40s now, I have to consider them young. This is, like, I'm not one of the Zoomers. Like, when I was a Zoomer, or sorry, when I was a 20-something, I was never a Zoomer, the 20-something Survivor fan, I could get away with thinking the 40-somethings were old. But now I have to adamantly reject that premise that she's old. But anyway, regardless of her age, I think she looks really young. If she wanted to lie about her age, I feel like she could actually pull it off. There's, hilariously, for the Big Brother fans, I know that you and Alexa don't watch, which is probably good for your mental health. But there is a player this season who's, like, 40-something who's lying and saying she's 34, which is my age. And it's hilarious how everyone clocked immediately that she was not 34 and that she was clearly much older. But if Julie wanted to lie and try to, like, get away with not being kind of the older person and saying that she was in her 30s, I actually feel like she may be able to pull it off.
Definitely, like, upper 30s. Like, if she came out with 31, it'd be like, okay.
I'm not 31. But, like,
but I agree with you. Like, I do think, like, she has the personality for it. She has the look for it. She has all of that where, like, definitely upper 30s could pull that.
That said, I just feel, even given the you know, recent success of people like Heather, you know, I still tend to fade the older women. Like, I like her a lot, but, you know, Chrissy aside, I just feel like most of the times it's safe to just kind of assume that the older, quote unquote, many quotes, will go early. So I am assuming that here, So that made me, I think that makes me shy away from thinking that she's going to get an episode title just because she has fewer chances, but maybe I'm wrong. I would love to see her in the finale.
Yeah, I think that's a great, I think that's something like, that's a great analysis of her because it could go so wrong for her, but it could go so right for her. Like it really, like she really is somebody who like has some opportunity. We've seen the older woman go really deep recently, but I do agree with you.
Yeah,
I do agree with you. Like, it's hard to kind of assume that they're going to go deep. Because if they don't, that just sucks. Like now you're stuck with her assuming she was going to go deeper than she really had any chance of. So, all right, last three things here. So goes home with an unused advantage and shot in the dark does not count for this. What do you got?
I've got Jake. I feel like this is a little bit of a chalky pick, but to me, you know, maybe it's the accent or just kind of his whole vibe, but I feel like he is going to be someone who is idol hunting. So that's the first step. Like if you want to find someone with an unused advantage, you got to figure out somebody who's going to like go for advantages, you know, like go actively want to go on journeys, actively hunt for idols, just be sort of someone who takes advantage of situations. I think Jake is that. I like him a lot. I mean, I was kind of fascinated by him. Like, you know, he's lost 80 pounds. He's like this, you know, attorney, Boston attorney, but like he's also into theater and also like he was a bartender and he compared himself to Chris Daughtry, which I thought was like such an awesome reference that we never hear. So I like him a lot. I think he's going to do well, but I think of the people on the cast that seem really likely to get an advantage at some point, which I definitely think he does. He also seems someone like who, you know, maybe could be misdirected or misted in a way that misplays it or doesn't play it and gets voted out. I feel like honestly he's kind of a chalky pick in this regard. Maybe I'm wrong. I feel like he's kind of an obvious person in this archetype. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I feel like this is a really tough one to predict. So I did assign 1 point.
This is a really hard one to predict because you have to pick not just somebody who gets an advantage, but also like doesn't play it. And a lot of times with this one, I try to think of like a go big or go home type of player, like a JT, because JT, like he got so much crap for season 34. But like I always said, JT didn't go out there to finish 13th. He went out there to win.
That was the right play. That was the right play.
It was the right move. Like he had to do what he had to do.
Just so, like his play in Heroes versus Villains with the Russell thing, based on the information he had, was the right play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So with all of that being said, I went with Brando here. And my reason is I think Brando is somebody who is really going to be playing hard from the start. And it's just going to be tough. Is Brando going to be able to get himself in as well as he thinks he is? Or is Brando going to think he's a little bit better off than he is? People figure out how smart Brando is. That could really work against him. Does he have the same endearing quality as Carson? Will he be able to find the same allies as somebody like Carson? I don't know. Maybe he does, and maybe they don't want to vote him off. But I think this is somebody who's going to get an advantage in their hand at some point and not necessarily play it right. So I have this. I have it for 2 points.
Yeah, my take here, and maybe I'm just totally off, because again, this whole prop bet thing, who knows? I'm probably wrong on like 95% of this. But I kind of view Jake as like the JT here to Brando Steven. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like if you're a super fan and you view the game really analytically and really cerebrally, then you probably play advantages when you think there's even like a sliver of doubt. Because mm-hmm. especially in this new era, you know, it is different than like, you know, even in 34 when JT last played. Like, if you can just survive 1 week, circumstances can change so quickly on a dime. You know, voting blocks can reshift and reassemble, and all of a sudden there's a new majority. So I really feel like more than ever, if you can kind of last one more day, maybe your life in the game could be continued longer than that. So mm-hmm. I feel like that leads a lot of times super fans more than other types of players to be risk averse in these situations where, yeah, they get advantages and then they think, oh, I'd rather not be the guy who looks like an idiot on national TV. I'd rather just like play the odds here. Mm-hmm. If I think there's even like a 5% chance that I'm going to go, I'd rather just burn it and be here for sure rather than having my, you know, torch snuffed a little bit earlier. I feel like it almost takes like kind of like a high roller, wheeler and dealer type personality who's maybe not the most like numbers crunching or maybe not the most kind of like anxious person to just be like, screw it. And I kind of get those vibes. I definitely get those vibes from JT. I definitely don't get those vibes from Steven. Like, I think if Steven had had advantages, he would have been playing and playing and playing them every season when he had an opportunity. Because it, oftentimes that's like the that's the smart move, you know? It's kind of like, you know, you think of football coaches, right? Like, sometimes the analytics move will actually be not to go for on fourth down. Sometimes, I mean, I think generally analytics suggest you go for on fourth down more often than coaches do, but sometimes it won't. But you'll still get like this brash personality as a coach that just says, I don't care what the numbers say, we're doing it. And that's the kind of person you want for this slot in the prop bet. I feel like that's my own personal theory. And that's why I went Jake, because I feel like he's kind of the swashbuckling type who's going to like get an advantage and be like, screw it. I'd rather be first. I'd rather be, you know, shoot for first and not get it than go out, you know, on my knees at sixth.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm thinking too far in the past, but I think of like Chelsea from 39. I think of Aubrey from 38. Like, maybe I'm going pre-40 and I shouldn't be going pre-40, but these were the players who were doing it, and these are very neurotic, very big super fans. Like, and so maybe I'm thinking too mid-30s, late-30s. And I should be thinking more of like, no, this is a new game, Phil. Drop the four. What are you going
to
do?
And yeah, maybe— I don't know. I just feel like when you listen to content these days from like nerdy, smart people, like people that are much smarter and even somehow nerdier than me, I feel like they mostly will say, just play the idol. Like, if there's any doubt, play the idol. And so then when people that are nerdy like me listen to these podcasts and then they somehow get cast onto the show, they have those like podcast thoughts. They have to have those podcast thoughts like reverberating in their brain. And so they play it. And I feel like the people that are not necessarily addicted to the podcast, like I assume Jake is not. He's busy, man. He's taking the bar. He's bartending, you know, both sides of the bar. He's going for it. He's not listening to all these podcasts. And so I feel like he's going to be thinking like, you know, making these decisions with his testosterone levels and not with like his, you know, podcast knowledge.
Yeah. No, I mean, very, very possible that Jake doesn't listen to any podcasts at all. So that could always be, what it is, but, we'll see what ends up happening. I mean, I think I would play an idol at this point. Cause I would, if I was Chelsea, I don't think I would sleep. And like, I knew Chelsea, like I met Chelsea. I talked to Chelsea a lot. I was living in LA when her season was airing, and I would go to a lot of the parties that she was at and everything. And I mean, she was such a big fan. Like, I felt for Chelsea big time because she loves the game of Survivor so much. It's tough. I mean, we got to try to win the damn thing, right? Like that's the hard balance you got to fight. But if you know you're screwed and you might as well just play your shot in the dark, as we've seen more and more people do in the early portion of the game, then you're going to be the next person on our list. Who do you have as playing their shot in the dark? Whether they use it successfully or not does not matter.
Yes, I'm going Julie here. 1 point again, just because, like you just said, I feel like people are more likely to play it early in the game where they have less knowledge of what's going on. They may just know that they're one of the targets. They haven't used their shot in the dark already because it's early in the game. We've seen this trend, which means that they've seen this trend in recent seasons.
Yep.
When they've watched, it's top of mind. So I feel like it's smart here to play somebody who you think could be an early boot. And sadly, even though I really hope I'm wrong, I feel like Julie might be in that spot. So I went with her.
Yeah, I like that pick. I have Sabaya with 2 points. I have Sabaya as my first boot in the boot list. Again, I don't necessarily think she's the one to go first, but that Yellow Tribe, if they are a disaster, like I think they're going to be, if she's one of the first two or three boots, she's playing her shot in the dark. And even if she's not one of the first two or three boots, she might just get nervous and play her shot in the dark. I don't know how much of a mind for the game she has. I do feel like she was probably kind of like a stunt cast like Carl was. Maybe I'm just assuming because he was also a truck driver. I don't know. But I know Carl was like kind of like, I don't think he applied. I think he was discovered. But all that being said, if you're going in one of these first two episodes or you're fearful of it, you might as well just play the shot in the dark. Like if you have a 0 in 6 chance of staying or a 1 in 6 chance, I'll take my shot. Like if I know they're going to vote for me, I'm going to do it. I think Sabaya is somebody who will play her shot in the dark. If she gets nervous, you were kind of talking about like, doesn't necessarily have like the best numbers mind. Maybe that's Sabaya. Maybe she just like doesn't have the best numbers mind going into this. So she's like, you know what? I think it could be me. I'm going to play it. Who was the person a couple seasons ago who just played theirs anyway, even though everybody's like, why are you doing that?
I forget. Someone in the chat.
Wasn't it successful too? I don't even remember. Maybe it wasn't successful, but like they played it and everybody's well, like,
it's, it's also kind of an interesting strategy in the early game that you can use not to have to vote.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I think that like there's probably a new meta that eventually develops in the game of like, if you're like a swing vote or something in the early game and you don't really want to have to show your cards because you're both, you're good with both sides in your in the early tribe, you just kind of say like, oh, I heard my name. And then you just play it and then no one's mad at you. I kind of feel like, you know, that could be a dominant strategy that we see used more and more. But yeah, I feel like we've seen so few shots in the dark taken, like in the last, I mean, it has spiked in recent years, but overall we have such a small sample size that this is a really interesting one. I just genuinely don't know. Like, do you think it's more likely that like a super fan plays a shot in the dark because they can run the numbers and they know that, you know, maybe they can read the try better and they know they're on the outs, so they'd rather, you know, they'd rather not go home, or I don't know. Or is someone who is not a super fan, are they more likely to like be misled into thinking that they're on the right side, so they don't think that they're in trouble? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, like, we saw Zach play it at his, we saw Sydney play it at hers. Like, I think it's just a crapshoot. I really do. All right. Last spot. Who will have alcohol at the auction? Hoping they actually have alcohol at this auction. I'm left with just Kelly. I put 1 point on it. I really have high expectations for Kelly this season because I just don't know where else to put her. So Kelly gets to go here.
So what's the definition here? Basically, like, they have to win the alcohol, or they at all consume the alcohol?
They just like get it. Like, they don't have to win it. Okay. It doesn't have to be like Wu and Kageon. I think he gets like the margarita or whatever, but you can get somebody to split it with you.
What you if know, you like go over and like sip out of their straw out of the market?
Yeah, okay, that's okay. Fine. Okay, you had alcohol
consume,
at the auction.
But you have to consume it. Like, what if you buy it and give it away? A lot of lawyerly questions here.
If you buy it and give it away, so if you buy it, you get the points. And if you drink it, you get the points. So it's okay, like you have right. to
So it's a it. Very inclusive and definition of alcohol.
Yes, it's a very inclusive definition. And the thing is, we have to see it happen, though. Like, it can't be like, oh, I read on EW the next day that there was actually somebody who was like chugging beers in the corner. If I don't see them chugging beers, they didn't chug beers.
All right. Well, I'm already locked in my answer. It's the last one. So it's not like your answers can change your responses can change my answers here. But I'm going with Sifu here.
Okay.
1 point. Mostly, I also just kind of, I like him, but I also just kind of ran out of spots for him. And mostly with the auction, I don't know exactly when they're going to do it in the season. Yeah. So I needed to pick someone who I thought would be there. So I didn't want to pick anyone from yellow, and I didn't want to pick anyone who I thought could be an early boot. So back to your comments earlier with Sifu being kind of the challenge beast or the sort of the main challenge contributor on red, kind of thought, okay, well, he's at least going to survive the early boots to get to the auction, which is going to be at some point broadly in the mid game, you would think. That's usually when it is. So you need somebody who can get there, and then you need someone who you think might enjoy alcohol. To me, I don't know, you know, he's in the martial arts, you know, maybe that sort of leans against alcohol usage. I think the martial arts sort of like maybe is against that. I don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. He's a world champion in push hands though.
Yes.
Which made me Google push hands. But he's been like a touring musician and like a gym owner and stuff. So I feel like he's been kind of around the world, and probably when you have that many experiences, there's been some alcohol involved. And especially when you're on Survivor for any period of time, but especially like a couple weeks, probably by the time they do the auction, I think he's going to be hankering for maybe a cold Bud Light, whoever the sponsor is, or maybe a nice like frozen margarita or like daiquiri. I don't know. We'll have to go back. I forget what all the drinks were on the past seasons.
I like how it was like Survivor goes from no sponsors to now like the number one beer in America sponsor. So Vaughn's got very high expectations for season 45 of Survivor.
Yeah, it's true. But, yeah. Outback will have like their own beer by that point, like the Outback, you know, Pilsner. But yeah, I just feel like Sifu is like, if there's like a pizza and beer option or something like that, he's going to be like, boom, maxing out.
Yeah. And I agree. Like Kelly, I think will go deep in the game, which is why I have this. The auction's going to happen in the post merge. I think Kelly will definitely get to the merge. So that's why I like this one. So those are our prop bets. We rattled through. We each equaled out to 36. I'm very impressed with both of our math.
I made it easy on myself by just doing no twos.
Yeah, I did notice that. You did know twos. I did a couple twos. I just put it into the Excel sheet where you just do equal sum and just let it figure it out. And I was like, oh, good. I have 5 points left here at the end, so I'll figure it out now. But so if you want to participate in this game, you can play along. The link is in the description here. So go ahead and click that and fill out your form. The questions are in there for you. You just got to leave your email address. We don't email you anything. Trust me, Alexa and I barely even check the email. It's just so that we can get in touch with you if you were to win the game, so we can send you the buff. If I should have said this on the last episode, but if you don't live in the US or Canada, we will just send you the equivalent of what a buff costs, because the shipping is absolutely insane off of either CBS's store or the our Planet buff. So that's just the big thing there. But all that being said, Vaughn, do you have anything else you want to add before I let you run out of here and I give our little what's going on with us?
I'll just say, first of all, thanks for having me. This was a really fun new brain experiment for me to try to tackle a new thing. Maybe I don't think I'm going to be quite as good at it, so I hope no one makes fun of me when I finish like bottom 10 or so on the boot list. But overall, I'd say this was a blast as always. Thanks for having me back. I'm really excited for the season. I think the 90-minute thing, honestly, we didn't really get into it, but it's a game changer. I think that that's going to allow us to really to immerse ourselves in a lot more of the strategy and kind of get a feel for really what's going on, instead of you and Alexa having to recap every episode with a bunch of caveats of like, well, based on what we saw or who knows what actually is happening. Now I think we will have a little bit more taste of what's really happening out there on the island. So that's really exciting. You know, I know that Survivor Australia is really great with longer episodes and longer seasons. If you have not seen Heroes versus Villains on Australian Survivor, please do yourself a favor and watch that. It's the best Survivor season I've ever seen, any version. It is unbelievable. So that alone gives me a little bit of hope that even though we still don't have any proper villains, we still don't have any proper bad people. Sorry if you guys disagree and didn't like my 30-minute rant in the middle of this podcast, but we need some bad people. We need some shitty people on the show. And even though we don't have that, I'm hopeful that we're staring down the barrel of a good season, because at least we get 30 more minutes of it every week.
Yeah. So that's what we got for this. Vaughn, I like all of that. Maybe we'll have you on later in the season. I can never predict what's going to happen. You're normally the first person we text if like Alexa or I are like done, like can't make it. What's Vaughn up to?
But my schedule just sucks. But maybe this, yeah. I'll try to block it off a little bit better.
Yeah, it's tough. But it's always great to get you on when we can. And Alexa and I will be back Wednesday night, 9:35-ish Eastern time, with our first episode recap. It's very exciting. Become a patron, patreon.com/survivorspecialist. You can play along in the power rankings game. That's for top tiers. But if you're $5 or $10 patrons, you get to listen to my after show, which I'll start doing on Thursday. John and McKenna are going to be doing the Survivor Rewind, which is always fun. And then $1 patrons are up, get to come in the Discord, which has been pretty quiet, but I think we'll start ramping up now that the season is back and people want to start sharing their thoughts and opinions on everything that's going on. Also, I've been throwing this in there every now and then, but if you're dying for a vacation, especially a Disney World vacation, I love Disney World. And so I joined with a travel agency where I can book your Disney World vacation for you. It costs you nothing. I can help you plan it. I live down here in Florida. I can make sure that you don't get stuck in any situations where you're like, man, I really wish we would have done this. I wish I had known about that. So yeah, the link for that is also in the bio. And John and I are about to talk about Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Bottoms. So Vaughn, if you haven't seen Bottoms, I highly, highly recommend. But that's it. We're about to do that right now. So if you're not tired of hearing me talk, go join that. Otherwise, I will see you Wednesday night, 9:35 p.m. Eastern time. Vaughn, thank you, as always, for joining. And we'll see everybody next time. End.